Mr. Turnbull, Reel 18. We're talking, Mr. Turnbull, about basically the things that make up the morale of a soldier in action. How important was mail to the soldier who was faced with constant danger?
Well, mail was very, very important. Naturally, one wanted news from your families on what things were like at home, and it tended to boost the morale of the soldier. That it was eagerly looked forward to, that as soon as the mail arrived, the men were looking for letters. That mail was a great booster, and one could see on one's face how the mail seemed to uplift people. There was great encouragement, really. Also, when if we could enlarge further, when probably cigarette rations were issued, men liked to receive the issue of cigarettes. They tended to boost people up if he had his cigarette ration. Myself, who was a non-smoker, that when I received my ration, I used to split it up and hand it round to the men who were avid smokers. That cigarette seemed to make a huge difference. And also, should I say, that really in the evening when hot food was brought up, when a hot meal was issued, that tended to cheer everybody up and was looked forward to if one was receiving an adequate supply of food.
You mentioned cigarette ration. That was actually an issue to you.
It was an issue.
Did you have to pay for it, or was it a...
No, it was a free issue.
Do you recall what the ration was?
We used to receive them in the 50s when we had them.
And that would be expected to last how long?
Can't remember exactly how long. Naturally, it wasn't every week. I wouldn't say it wasn't a weekly supply.
Did you experience men who received bad news from home and the response to that?
I can't say that I did experience that. There again, if anyone received news like that, he tended to go to his company officer if it was anything of an adverse nature. If he had trouble at home, probably initially, in most cases, he didn't want his friends to know very much about it. I would say that he tended to disclose whatever it was to through his platoon officer and his company commander.
And this would strengthen the importance of the company and platoon commanders having a very close relationship with their men, for them to be able to feel they could do it.
Yes, and if one had the right type of platoon officer, and I would say that really all the lieutenants who were commanding platoons that I came in contact with were the right type of person. They were like myself, that been brought into the army and then had the right training as officers, and looked upon his men as men who had to be looked after and commanded in the right direction at all times. He had to be forceful and give encouragement wherever he could, and be a good leader, working closely with his NCOs, and like myself, he soon found out that that was the way to gain respect by maintaining close contact.
Did you have any men sent home within your own experience in Northwest Europe?
None. Never.
Because of breakdown?
Never.
Did you experience any men who were very reluctant to go into action at a given time and you had to cajole them to do so?
Never. Should one say that really people from the North Country, I would say through their initial young days, that being brought up in hard times, and that training that they'd had in the young days bore them in good stead when they'd come into conditions like what they were experiencing now. That is what I've said right from the beginning. I think that the training that they had at young people bore you in good stead during these times.
We've talked about snipers. How did you hold snipers? Did they make you particularly angry? Would you feel it was a dirty kind of warfare that these people were doing?
I would say that one just accepted this, that that was the type of thing that one had to expect, and it made you feel more and more wary and more observative.
Did you capture them?
No, we didn't capture them. They were more or less shot down. One didn't like the idea of being sniped at. But there again, it was something that one had to expect, that they'd been put there to do a job, and it was part of the combat situations.
And they tended to fight it out until they were ineffectual.
They were very, very fanatical. They'd been trained to be that way. That really, Adolf Hitler must have had a great hold over the German nation. The same as we looked up to probably somebody like Churchill. But I would say that really we weren't as fanatical about anybody as they were about Hitler. Hitler was the man that they had to follow, that his creed, that probably had happened during the 1930s to 40, that was the atmosphere that they'd been living in, and it was obvious that that was the man that they thought would see them through everything in the end.
Were you coming across booby traps as they retreated?
Not at this period. Not in this type of country.
It was too early.
Too early.
When you moved from the time after, just after St. Pierre, what happened then? What followed next?
Well, after St. Pierre and this period that we're talking about now, the next thing was where we had close contact with the German formations was Rory. This was really, again, a horrific time. And what we found there was that really the battalion who took the brunt initially there was the 11th Battalion. The 10th had had it initially at St. Pierre, And now it was the turn of the 11th Battalion. Really, the information was that Rory had to be cleared. I think there had been stalemate around the Carn area. And Rory was to the west of the Carn area. And this area was the area that had to be cleared next, that really behind Rory as well. I think there was rather a little bit of high ground. But when the 11th had to make the attack on Rory, was there again. The situation was, and I think I'm right in saying this, was it was a frontal attack with fixed bayonets. Well, like what I said at St. Pierre, the way that we'd been trained in England, my opinion was that really this was rather a thing of the past, but it was still happening again. No doubt, probably the type of countryside may have had something to do with it, that it wasn't suitable, not rolling tank country. But it did attempt to soften it up with artillery fire, but you couldn't get the close contact with tank formations. Although in Rory itself, the Germans did have tanks there. Now, whether they were there just to help to defend Rory, which was probably the case, and the 11th Battalion, they were the people who took the brunt initially there. And they had quite a horrible time, that the casualties were very heavy. The role of the 10th Battalion was that we were a support battalion.
What do you recall of your actual involvement here?
Well, all that happened was we could hear what was going on. And eventually, after the 11th had maintained, and also the Tyneside Scottish, a foothold in Rory, the role of the 10th Battalion was to advance and attempt to seize the little bit higher ground beyond Rory.
This advance, was it similar to St. Pierre, or had you learnt a lesson and it was a different kind of game entirely?
Well, we had learnt lessons.
So how did you advance through the 11th and up to the high ground?
Well, it was more or less not really a frontal thing. They did try to outflank, but I can remember before this took place, the evening before, we could still hear tanks rolling around in the woods to the side, and one wondered exactly what it would be like. But what we found was, I think that the Germans had decided to really retire from the area, and we found that really the advance through Rory wasn't as difficult as what it might have been. I think the plan of the German formations roundabout was that the time had come after the bashing that they'd had, that there would have to be a retirement. And we did sustain casualties, but not like as heavy as what the 11th and the Tyneside Scottish had been. And after about, I think, probably only about 2 or 3 days at the most, we were relieved. So that really, in this episode, the 10th came off better than what the other two battalions had done.
You took the high ground.
We managed to get a foothold there. And then I can't remember the battalions who came up to relieve us. But of course there weren't Durham battalions. We were relieved by...
Did the Germans try seriously to get the high ground back that you had taken over the 2 or 3 days you were there? Were you fighting any defensive actions against counterattacks?
Not a great deal. I think the idea had been come then that really they couldn't accomplish any more there.
What was Rory like as you went through? As you, it had already seen a pretty bitter struggle. What were you seeing as you went through?
Well, there was scenes of devastation around. And, well, the scenes of battle were there. But I think at this time, as I've said previously, I think you just sort of became a little immune from it all, that it was something now that was going to be accepted. And that was it.
Were there any sign of civilians?
No, no sign at all.
And civilian casualties?
No.
The position that you took, as you say, you got a foothold on the high ground, and you said you took it relatively easily, but there must have been some fighting on the way.
There was, oh yes. Yes, we lost...
What form did that take?
Well, as I say, I wasn't in the forefront. It was the platoon formations that went on first. That my role at that time was still in headquarter company. And I couldn't give an apt description of what the men were who were in the forefront of the assault. We were more or less follow up, trying to ensure with what they required was supplied, etc. And when we heard about casualties and that sort of thing, that attempts were made to do what could be done.
You'd lost Major Blackett at St. Pierre, who took over from him commanding the company.
That's a funny thing, that really my mind doesn't carry us back to any great individuals. I can't understand why my mind doesn't carry us back to that a great deal. They can't have registered on my personality as much as the names that I've mentioned. It was more, should I say, the lieutenants controlling in control of platoons that registered more than what the company commander did. I keep mentioning people who registered more. I can't understand that, really. Why? That certain individuals seem to impress themselves on your mind, that really, I've got the feeling that they're, if I could say so, been better leaders. Probably they moved around more than what the others did. Which was, it's a very important thing. The same as I've mentioned previously, even about divisional commanders and brigadiers and people like that. You can remember some people and you can't remember others. So there must be a reason why that should happen. That's what I've always said, that really close contact with, even right away down to even section level, is most important. That if men can see somebody of a higher rank moving around, it seems to inspire confidence.
Were you seeing anything of Colonel Sanders, your battalion commander? Was he putting in appearances during these actions that you were
doing? The only time that I can remember seeing Colonel Sanders was when we were in England. When I can remember him vividly. People like Marley, he'll never forget. People like Jeffries. I mean, why should you remember them people better than others? There must be a reason.
What date was this?
By this time we were getting up to about the August.
Where did you go to after Rory?
Well, the next thing I can remember is we went to Mezidon. And there again, the 10th Battalion were involved at Mezidon.
What are your memories of that?
Not a great deal, but we were in actual combat again around that area. And there again, casualties were quite heavy again. And at this period now, we got the news that really the brigade would not be made up to strength, and the 70th Brigade would be disbanded, which was rather nonplussing at the time.
Before we go on to that, what was your role at Mezidon? What were you trying to do there?
I think there again it was a case of I think it was still rather hilly ground, but not like the countryside that we mentioned outside Saint-Pierre, the hedgerows and the small fields. That had gone, was more a rolling countryside, slight hills. That was the type of countryside, and really the could I say that the tank formation came into it a little bit more now. We seem to be working more closely with the tank units which were roundabout. They start to come into the picture more now.
What kind of thing were they doing? How did you cooperate with tanks?
Well, it was more, they were more or less in a supporting atmosphere. We weren't sort of advancing behind tanks, anything like that.
Was your role then to take a position before the tanks came in? Was they in effect?
That was the effect. But really, really the firepower that you gained from the tank formations was most welcome. That the company commander had to work with the tank commanders on what covering fire was required, etc. And that was a boost to morale, should we say. If you got an artillery combination and also firepower from tank formations, it tended to, should we say, uplift the advancing troops.
So it was down to the level of company commanders who could contact directly.
the tank formations weren't too far away. He wasn't just taking orders from. There was like cooperation between the two, if required.
Were tank losses heavy? Our tank losses.
Can't remember a great deal about that. As I said, this time it wasn't a case of really tanks advancing and making tank formations. I mean, it wasn't in the desert, but it wasn't that type of combat. It was more supporting roles.
Were your attacks here, at this place that you mentioned, more in tune with the training that you'd had in England?
It was becoming more so now when we're in, we're more, as I've said, a rolling countryside, when this type of approach could be conducted better than what we'd had previously.
And you were more happy with this?
I think everybody was, because we're still sustaining casualties, but not as heavy as what they'd been before.
Were you getting any air support?
Can't remember any air support.
You now met the Germans on several occasions. Were there any weapons of theirs which you looked upon as being particularly dangerous and efficient against you? What were the weapons?
Well,
that were
I would say the Spandau was an effective weapon. It had a different sound to it, and one knew when a Spandau was being used. And well, it was like our Bren gun. In my opinion, a very efficient weapon, which was well used by the German.
What other weapons were particularly dangerous, effective?
Well, they had the mortar type as well.
What was that like? Could you hear it being fired?
You could hear it. You could hear it coming.
What was it like to be under a mortar attack?
Well, not very pleasant. Really, when one dropped, and as I could say, when a man had been hit, it wasn't a very pleasant situation. And that happened quite frequently.
Were these mortars the Minenwerfer that came over in bunches that you were against?
Well, when it was a sustained, if they had registered a target which they thought was worth registering on, and it was an uncomfortable feeling, and if one could say it was a type of thing that one had to expect and become used to.
Any other weapons the Germans using against you that you respected?
Individually, I would say I can't think of a great deal, really. It was a case of more getting used to the idea that really, when you had to advance and cover the ground, get on with it. And by this time, I think I've already said that I'd assumed the position of whereby the main object was to try and encourage men, if they were given an order, it had to be done, and get on with the job, and whatever happened would happen. And whether that was only my reaction and not the feelings of the of other men, but whether it was your individual makeup or not, well, I can't comment on that. But that was how I approach the situation now. That our dealings now with dealing with quite a number of different types of officer. And I can always remember, I can't remember the exact period of when Major Blackett came back to the battalion, if you remember, I did say that he's initially wounded on the start line at Saint-Pierre, and after quite a few months, he eventually returned to the battalion, and he was posted back to the company that I was in, and I can always remember him coming up the road on his own. And when he saw me still there, he was absolutely amazed that I was still there and still assuming the same position in the company as when he were left. And I can always remember how delighted he was that we had resumed our association.